I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, if you look closely at the economy, you can see some cracks starting to show, particularly in consumer spending habits. A report released today by the Commerce Department shows that U.S. retail sales dropped more than expected in May, and there are signs that more households are having trouble paying their bills. The number of people who are behind on their credit cards is climbing. Also, more and more people are using buy now, pay later for their day-to-day expenses, including essentials. BNPL is largely unregulated, and there are hidden costs for using these services. We're going to look under the hood at buy now, pay later to explain how you can protect yourself from getting whammied. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Middle and lower income households are having a tougher time making it through each month. And we know this because of several key economic indicators. Here's some of the most telling signs: rising default rates on small loans, dwindling savings, increased debt, and struggles with food, rent, and utilities. And the growing number of consumers are now turning to short-term high-interest loans and buy now, pay later financing in order to purchase essentials. And this, they're falling further and further behind. This is a bad sign for the economy, and it's building a massive possible debt bomb. We're joined by Julie Margetta Morgan, president of the Century Foundation, a nonpartisan public policy research organization that conducts evidence-based research on economic inequality and education access and other key issues. And Julie, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Julie, I do want to talk about things like buy now, pay later, but I do want to get to talking about how the Trump administration is dismantling the Department of Education and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and how that also is going to hurt middle America. So we've got a lot of ground to cover here in our short time together, but I appreciate you coming on today. So let's talk about how people are turning to things like buy now, pay later. And how I'm always tempted to call it a loan, but officially it's not a loan. So why can't I call it a loan?
Well, I think you can call it a loan. I think it's important for people to think of it that way in their daily lives. You know, there's some nitpicky stuff about the legal definition of buy now, pay later. In my time at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, we determined that buy now, pay later is certain types of buy now, pay later are actually loans that ought to be regulated like other types of credit. And of course, now the Trump administration is stepping in and rolling some of that back. You know, but it, at a basic level, this is money that's being lent to a person in order to cover a purchase, which fits kind of like the common way that we think about what a loan is.
So we have a law, Truth in Lending law. And under that law, it covers if you borrow something that has more than four payments, which is the loophole that buy now, pay later uses, since they say, oh, we're just four payments, so therefore we can do things. We don't have to abide by Truth in Lending. And so there's a lot of things happening that people use this service, they don't understand what they're getting into.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I think this is like in terms of the kind of big picture here, people are being really squeezed right now, as you mentioned, by high prices, by the effects of tariffs, by kind of general uncertainty about the economy. And there are a lot of different ways for people to deal with that lack of cash. You know, one thing we saw while I was at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is that where people are short on money, there's always a lender who's willing to step in and fill that gap. And, you know, what we also saw was that where you have these kind of like fintech investors, what they were looking for was kind of like gaps in our regulatory structure. Where can I create a lending product that serves the same purpose in people's lives and then gets me the same profit as I would from a different type of credit, but where I don't have to follow the same rules. And so, you know, the playbook we've seen on Buy Now, Pay Later is the same that we see from a lot of other products, like, you know, paycheck advance products called Earned Wage Access or other kind of short-term loans, income share agreements to pay for education. You know, there are all these products where, you know, fintechs and other investors are saying, you know, like, it looks like a duck and it, whatever, it quacks like a duck, but it's not a duck. And therefore, we don't have to follow the same rules.
So the explosion of buy now, pay later, it's now when I go online to buy something and I go to the checkout page of the purchase thing, and it's like the default. I have to opt out of buy now, pay later now because it automatically says, hey, wouldn't you like to break this up into four payments? And there's no interest, and therefore, wouldn't you want to do something like that? And a lot of people are like saying, yeah, that sounds pretty cool to me. Why not break it up into four payments? Because we have this thing called, you know, purchase pain, and it lessens the purchase pain. And retailers, they've done studies and they've shown that people who use buy now, pay later will actually buy more because they think, you know, hey, I'm getting a deal here. So there's a lot happening here, telling people to use this service to break up these payments, and but they're not really educated on what the downsides are. So do you think that needs to be done?
Yeah, I think it's really important to educate people on buy now, pay later. I think it's important to regulate these products just like any other type of credit. But I think one of the really important things to know here is that in general, what we find in the research is that people who are using buy now, pay later are also using, and in many cases, maxing out other types of debt as well. So where we see people using buy now, pay later, you know, repeated and overlapping uses of it, that's a little bit of a bellwether of larger economic problems for these families. So our research shows that, or the CFPB's research really shows that, you know, people who are using buy now, pay later are often heavily using credit card debt, student loans, other types of personal loans as well. So we really need to not look at that one purchase in isolation, but, you know, more broadly, what do people's kind of credit stack look like, you know? And when we look at that, I think that's where we see the larger economic trends you're pointing to, where people are becoming delinquent. We have a high delinquencies on buy now, pay later, but also high delinquencies on credit cards, on student loans, and on other kinds of debt. So it really adds up and kind of squeezes American families.
So the companies that do buy now, pay later, they defend this. They're saying we're offering this service. This is something that people really want and they can use. It's beneficial to them. They have things that they need, but they don't have the money for it. And maybe they don't even qualify for a credit card, but they can use this service and it's no interest. So they think if there's something you absolutely need, say you need a new phone and you don't have the money for it, this is a way to do that. But now we're seeing buy now, pay later being used for things like DoorDash, and people are taking out four installments on a burrito. So, you know, and they're taking, there are people who have maybe low impulse control who are like saying, yeah, well, who wouldn't want to take out a loan on a burrito?
Yeah, you know, I see that mostly as that kind of larger squeeze that's being put on people. You know, when people are breaking up a large purchase into multiple installments, you know, that makes a lot of sense. We see that across the board. When people are feeling like they have to break up their weekly grocery purchase into four payments, that's when I think we're in trouble, right? You know, people are not able to afford their everyday expenses and are having to break them up over time. And that, you know, those payments add up over time into something that they can't pay, where they'll be encountering the late fees that are associated with buy now, pay later. If I could, I want to mention one more point about buy now, pay later that I think is really important to understand. You know, when we think about the typical buy now, pay later product, we think about four payments, no interest, you know, in many cases, no late fees, although that's not the case across the board. But many of the companies that offer buy now, pay later are actually shifting into products that look very different and look much more like a normal personal loan or even a purchase you would make on your credit card. So for example, Costco recently formed a partnership with Affirm that was announced as a buy now, pay later partnership, but it's not that traditional model. This is a loan.
We're going to come back to this. Oh, so I want to hear the rest of the story. We got to take a break here. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. American households are sinking deeper into debt, with total consumer liabilities reaching record levels amid rising living costs, stagnant wages, and the return of the student loan repayment programs. Recent data shows that U.S. consumer debt has ballooned to more than $18 trillion in early 2025, which is an increase of nearly $4 trillion since 2020. It looks like we have a debt bomb on our hands. This is not a good sign for the economy, particularly for low and middle class Americans, low waging earners. So what can be done about it? What do we need to know? How do we need to understand this? We're joined by Julie Margetta Morgan, and she is with the Century Foundation to tell us more. So you were saying about the buy now, pay later connecting with Costco. What was that?
Yeah, you know, I was saying, you know, I think we have thought about buy now, pay later as this pay in four, no interest product, but increasingly we're seeing products that are called buy now, pay later, like this partnership with Costco, that's really not that. This is actually a loan with a term of 3 to 36 months and with interest ranging from 10 to 36%. So, you know, I think it's important to be aware that people might be kind of lured in by the promise of what they think is their traditional buy now, pay later that they might have been using for years and actually face, you know, much higher interest charges than they thought they would have.
Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or comment, if you use buy now, pay later, has it worked out for you or have you been whammied by it? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So as I understand it, if you do miss one of your payments, then you do have to pay fines. And these fines are a lot. And this is where the company makes a lot of their money from with this no interest semi-loan that they give people. It's like this is where they get you. They expect people not to be able to make all these payments. And this is something that I think is like 2 out of 3 people who have done these buy now, pay laters have missed at least one payment.
Yeah, that's right. The level of missed payments that we're seeing on buy now, pay later is quite high right now. I think I had seen around 30%. And that's really important to your point. We're seeing people incur pretty hefty late fees. I think the CFPB had put it around $7 per transaction for buy now, pay later. You know, and as I said, that's in addition to what people are facing on the other debt that they carry, because we often see that that missed payment on buy now, pay later is not in isolation. It corresponds to a missed payment on a credit card, on an auto loan, on other types of debt.
Also, they gain a lot of information data on people, and they sell that data, and that data is used against the consumers. So if I buy something like dog food, then suddenly I'm going to be hit with a doggone amount of specialized targeting ads.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, I think it's important to remember how much information these companies are tracking about how much money we have and what our payment preferences are. So when you go to make a purchase on a site like Amazon, you know, they may well be, you know, pitching you different ways to pay for that product based on information they have about your ability to pay.
And so the fact that you don't have to get a full credit screening, like if I get a credit card, that's seen as a lot of people are attracted to that because maybe they've already sort of maxed out all their credit cards, and then maybe they've already have had some failures or failure to pay on payday loans. So we're seeing an increase in payday loans in the United States as well, from about $35 billion in 2023. Is projected to reach $43 billion by 2028. They're seeing a huge growth rate there. So people are turning more and more to these roadside ways of borrowing money, and they have high interest rates.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we can only expect to see more of that. You know, in Washington, we're looking at a bill that's being pushed through Congress that would cut back on Medicaid, would cut back on SNAP, would make it harder to get, you know, federal student grant aid for college. All of these things are going to make people's lives more expensive and contribute to that overall debt bomb.
Yeah, so it's as people are being squeezed and squeezed harder and harder, particularly lower and middle class families. So with the rising inflation as well, we really haven't seen the inflation has been rising, but not as much as people are expecting. So are we bracing for the inflation to hit as the tariffs come into play?
Yeah, you know, I've been listening to what the experts have to say here, and I think what the best we've heard is that just you wait. There's more to come. We're seeing merchants respond to the tariffs in various ways, where they might hold down costs right now that we're gonna feel in our pocketbooks down the road. But people are already feeling the costs of certain tariffs. You know, I saw some interesting research about the effects on young parents. The cost of car seats is up. The cost of strollers is up. The cost of diapers is up. So it's harder and harder for many young families to sustain these costs.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we've been talking about these buy now, pay later loans. And if you've been using them, let's go to Tanya. Tanya, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I went to a dentist to get some work done, and I kept telling them that I didn't have the money to pay even like a monthly. And so one day I went in and they kind of pressured me into doing it. And after I thought about it, I didn't decide to go back to get the procedure done. And I keep getting calls every day and text message from Cherry, which is the lending company that works mostly with dentist office, because one of the things that they told me in one of the conversations that I have with them is that like this would transfer over. So even if I try to go use a different dentist, I wouldn't be able to take out a loan. And I'm like, well, I paid two payments for services that I did not receive. And so why don't you call the dentist office that you pay that money to? You did not send me a check. You did not pay me. You pay them. Yes, I take full responsibility. I did apply for that, but I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And then I didn't get the work done. So why don't you call them to give you back your money right, instead of harassing me?
Tanya, thank you so much for the call. I think it's really, really interesting. So, Julie, it sounds like these types of practices are becoming more widespread and coming into non-traditional businesses like the dentist.
Yeah, I'm really glad your caller raised this point, because medical debt and kind of alternative payment products for medical debt is something we spent some time on at the CFPB. And increasingly, we saw exactly what this caller is describing, where, you know, they didn't realize that they were signing on for debt. They maybe signed on for debt that was related to services that were not ever provided. And they're really stuck on the hook with this. And so I think it's something we really need to get a handle on at both the state and the federal level.
I think like these businesses are becoming more savvy in how to do this. I mean, they probably have conventions and conferences where they learn how to use these instruments in order to get more money out of their consumers. And that's pretty scary that they're ganging up. They're sharing their info on how to skin the public, but the public is not being informed on how to protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is a shift from kind of like your local dentist offering its own payment plan to people who might not be able to afford, to dentists getting sales pitches from CareCredit or other large banks that offer financial products. And those sales pitches often include certain tactics that could coerce people into taking on debt.
Another caller. Let's go to Lola. And Lola, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So I was listening in, and Chad made a comment about something about, you know, when you're using this, it also shows that there's other charges like maxing out on credit card debt. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm pretty sure it does. But like for myself, I like the buy now, pay later. And she also mentioned this too. It's kind of sad if we have to use something like this to pay for groceries, but that's exactly what I use it for. And I didn't even know I could until a couple months ago, but it used to be where I could get a certain amount of groceries for like $40. And now that same amount of groceries in this day and age is $100. And so instead of going into the grocery store and paying $100 out of my pocket, I can do it online, do 4 payments to pay later. And that groceries, you know, I still have additional money for that week or 2 weeks. It's every 2 weeks. And if we were doing it smart, we do it on our payrolls, right? And so to me, that's why I think I like it personally. I think it's helpful for my budget and my home.
And you're able to keep up, Lola?
Yes, I'm able to keep up. And so I try to do it. Well, I usually do it so I by my pay period. So if this week it comes out this week and it's every 2 weeks. So that means every 2 weeks my payments are going to come out. And I actually had so many at one time and everything was covered. It helped me one, time wise. I don't have to go into Walmart and get the food. And two, I just order it online. And three, instead of, like I said, $100 coming out today, I break that up into 4 payments. And then if I need to do it again, same thing, is it 4 payments. So
yeah,
it's helped me.
Personally. All right. Well, it works for you.
And I think we as consumers just need to be responsible and kind of, I was listening to the lady, you know, you have to read the fine print, and I always read the fine print myself.
All right. Well, Lola, thank you for that. Appreciate that. But it's, you know, Lola, I appreciate you calling in, but you're helping us be aware of the situation that a lot of people are in these days, that they have to use these financial instruments in order to buy their groceries. Julie, your reaction?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I work at an organization that's looking at how we make a better world for people. And so in some cases, that means making the financial products like BNPL as good as they can be. In this circumstance, I think it's about how do we get our groceries to cost $40 instead of $100, you know, and how do we make sure that our paychecks actually fit the work that we did so that we can afford those groceries each week. So sometimes the product itself is really the signal of the larger problem.
And what happens if you get sick? Are you, something happens at work and you can't work for a while? You know, you're kind of betting that you're going to be able to work.
I mean, that's exactly what we see. So many people are just living without a safety net, and we've constructed a safety net out of financial products, and that's not good for anyone.
I mean, I can understand your car breaks down and you got to get it repaired and you don't have the money, the cash, and you would need something to help you do that. But the idea that you would use this money for like Coachella tickets, there was a stat that 60% of the Coachella tickets were bought on buy now, pay later. You got to wonder, like, what is this really meant for?
Yeah, I mean, the way we think about that difference is, you know, how do we use financial products to cover income shocks? Sometimes that is a good place for a person to use a financial product to give them a little bit of a bridge. But, you know, where people are using them to pay for basics, that's where we have concerns. And, you know, for things like concert tickets, my mind always goes to, like, you know, how are these companies leveraging promotions to try to get in with certain types of consumers? And I think that's what we've seen a lot with the pairing of financial products with big name concerts.
All right. And now we're seeing the big credit card companies, they've seen identified buy now, pay later as competition, and now they're trying to purchase the companies themselves, and so that they'll all be folded into those big financial instruments.
Yeah. This is about emerging competition to their business model. I think, as some of your callers noted, sometimes buy now, pay later is a very appealing option because it may not carry interest. It may have smaller late fees, and that's a competitor to credit cards. So we have seen a lot of credit cards offering their own version of pay in 4 or buying up some of these products, and that leaves fewer options for consumers. And I think, you know, the patterns that we've seen with credit card companies over the last couple of years should make us really nervous about all of this. You know, what we've seen is credit card companies kind of leveraging the broader financial trends to their advantage. So as, you know, everybody's concerned about interest rates going up, credit card companies are raising their interest rates, and then they're raising them a little bit more to build in more profit for themselves. So I'm very skeptical of the way that credit card companies are going to play here.
All right, so we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to ask you about the restartup of student debt, student payments, that's back, how that's impacting people, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, what's going on there, and also the Department of Education, the dismantling of that, how that impacts people. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about signs of cracks in the economy, particularly with working class Americans, middle class Americans, as they're dealing with rising costs and trying to keep up efforts to get them to borrow money that they may or may not need to actually spend, but it's there, and sometimes they do. But also we're talking now about what's happening with the resuming of repayments for student loans. We're joined by Julie Margetta Morgan, and she is the president of the Century Foundation and a former bureau official with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and also with the Department of Education. If you've got a question or a comment about how you're dealing right now with this economy, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Julie, in May, the Department of Education resumed involuntary collections for student loans. That includes wage garnishments, tax refund offsets, and Social Security seizures for defaulted borrowers. How is that impacting Americans?
Well, it's a pretty substantial impact on people who are in default on their student loans, and it adds to the larger impact that we've seen from the Trump administration's efforts to, you know, get rid of really generous income-driven repayment plans that were offered to borrowers who were not in default on their loans. So, you know, we're seeing the cost of having a student loan become more and more expensive under this administration. I think we'll expect to see more and more borrowers end up in default and subject to those involuntary collections methods.
So during the Biden administration, he made efforts, and he was successful with some, to do some loan forgiveness. The Supreme Court dialed that back, saying that he wasn't authorized to do that under the law, even though I think the law is pretty clear that he did have that authority. So now a lot of these borrowers, people who went to university and took out loans, student loans, in order to pay for the high cost of tuition, they're having to pay this money back. And had they thought that they were never going to have to pay it back?
No, I don't think so. I think when you talk to borrowers, they believed that they had to pay the money back. I think many times when I talk to borrowers, what I actually hear are horror stories about their attempts to pay it back and to navigate the federal student loan system, only to be confounded by servicers who are not following the law. You know, in many cases, people are facing extraordinarily long wait times just to talk to somebody about what their options are to repay their loans.
Now, there is a Trump proposal to dramatically reform income-driven repayment plans, and this would actually become more aggressive in clawing back this money?
Yeah, so under the Biden administration and many prior presidential administrations, there were attempts to make it a little bit easier to repay your student loan in proportion to your income. So if your income goes down, you don't reduce the person's overall indebtedness, but you reduce the amount of their payment. And then you say, you know, after 20 or 25 years, you've paid enough to the government and your loan is forgiven. The Trump administration and now Republicans in Congress as well are attempting to claw that back and to make it much, much harder for people to pay back their loans when they fall on hard times, and much harder to kind of, you know, like assure students and families that if they borrow money to pay for college, they'll be able to make their payments regardless of their income.
There is the whole issue of why is college so expensive to begin with. And I know at the beginning of this month, you did testify before Congress about the rising cost of college tuition and what can be done to remedy that. Although that wasn't the purpose of the hearing, they were more interested in what they can do to punish Ivy League universities.
Yeah, and part of my point in my testimony was to really refocus the conversation on the schools that the vast, vast majority of students in this country attend, which is public community colleges, open access universities, and other state colleges. And they are the challenges driving costs are really the public contribution to education, which has historically gone down, and I think which we can see potentially going down again if this this bill that that Congress is trying to pass right now actually does pass, because the bill is going to put an extraordinary amount of pressure on states to provide funding for food assistance and medical assistance for families, and that money is going to come straight from higher education.
And that's the big ugly bill.
That's right.
As we call it. You know, that Trump calls it the big, beautiful bill. I don't think it's that beautiful. I think it's the big, ugly bill. But what's happening with Pell Grants? They want to do away with Pell Grants?
So neither the House nor the Senate bill would do away with Pell Grants entirely, but particularly the House bill would take a big cut out of Pell Grants for a lot of students. And they'd make it essentially more expensive for a person to get a Pell Grant by increasing the number of credits that you'd need to take in order to qualify. So you'd almost have to take on a loan in order to get access to your Pell Grant. So it's really going to have an effect on lower income and on middle income families' abilities to send their kids to college.
So the Department of Education had been an advocate for trying to make it easier for people to go to college and to administer Pell Grants and loans and things like that. But what's happening now with the Trump administration? Well, what the dismantling of the Department of Education, where does that leave us?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at these changes through two different lenses. One is the larger point of this bill is to create tax cuts for the most wealthy Americans. So leaders in Congress are looking for every single kind of penny to pull out of the piggy bank to give to those wealthier Americans. And most of those are coming from programs that support the rest of us, you know, to send our kids to college, to provide medical care to children, and to make sure kids have food on their plates. So I think that's one important lens. The other is, you know, there's a real effort here to turn things that used to be public programs over to the private sector. So on the higher education side, we see the Trump administration and then leaders in Congress right now, you know, really pushing, let's pare back federal student loans so that predatory private student lenders can play a bigger role. And let's open up federal grant aid to a larger set of private providers who we've seen historically over time, don't have consumers and students' best interests in mind.
So what can borrowers do now if they are looking at this of defaulting or these extreme measures? Is there anything they can do to lessen the load for them?
I mean, you know, certainly I would advise borrowers to take advantage of whatever repayment plans they can find available to them through the federal system. You know, kind of depends on what the Trump administration is allowing to happen. But I would really be looking at those repayment plans, get into the lowest payment you can find. But I also would advise people, you know, if you're having trouble with your federal student loan servicer, if you think you're not getting what you're supposed to get out of that program, you should be talking to your state attorney general's office, because they, you know, have responsibility for oversight here too. And it's important for the law to be enforced where appropriate.
So, I mean, how is this impacting consumers? I mean, people, they left school decades ago, and they're still being confronted and still have to pay back these loans.
That's right. And in fact, you know, we've seen people who are 25 years in trying to get themselves out from underneath loans that were made the last time we opened up the federal student loan program to big private predatory student lenders. So we're really still dealing with the problems of the past while creating new problems for consumers and for the families. And, you know, I think one important piece to keep in mind here is that this isn't just a Department of Education problem too. This is a consumer financial protection problem, because up until a few months ago, we had a big set of cops on the beat here who were really looking out to make sure that for-profit colleges and federal and private student lenders were following the law and were not defrauding students and their families. But the Trump administration has shut down virtually all of that activity. So people are really left to their own defenses.
And this is impacting the credit scores of millions of borrowers. In the first quarter of 2025 alone, 2.2 million borrowers lost 100 points on their credit scores due to the restart of collections and credit reporting. So this has a direct impact on how they can manage their finances.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we're going to continue to see those impacts down the line, because credit scores are used for a variety of different purposes at this point. You know, it's not just purchasing a home, but it's the ability to get access to a rental, or, you know, to get a job. And so I think we'll see pretty wide-ranging impacts on people's larger financial stability due to those drops.
So people need to get up to date on where they are on their student loans, make sure that they're in compliance, maybe set up an auto pay. They can no longer pay zero. They have to pay at least $50 a month now. So things have gotten a lot more harsh with the repayment of student loans. That's impacting Americans. And it's also taking away their ability to be consumers in the economy as well. So that's also another concern. We're going to take a break here, or we're going to come back. We're going to talk about what's happening with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is The Source from Texas Public Radio. Our number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Julie Margaretta Morgan is with us. She is the president of the Century Foundation. You're a former official with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which right now is having a structural shakeup, to say the least. We talked about some of these financial instruments that people are dealing with and how they're being taken to the cleaners sometimes with them, and there's really not a cop on the beat anymore in order to try to enforce the law or even to educate the public. What do you see happening right now with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
Well, in many ways, we're at a standstill in terms of the workers at that agency's ability to actually work on behalf of consumers. And then meanwhile, we're seeing the leaders of the agency try to roll back many really basic protections for consumers that were accomplished under the last administration. So, you know, we made strides to work on payday lending, on credit card late fees, on overdraft fees, and all of these efforts are on the chopping block.
I remember Biden was talking about no more junk fees. What happened to that?
We're going to have junk fees again, apparently.
They're back. Okay.
And, you know, that I think the focus on junk fees really came from a place where we saw financial institutions and others in the economy just kind of nickeling and diming families. And it's frustrating, but it's also a barrier to competition, because it's impossible to know how much something costs if the cost increases with a bunch of fees right before you make your payment.
So they're nickeling and diming, but it's, to them, it's billions of dollars when you do it to everyone over and over again.
Absolutely. That's what we saw with credit card late fees, billions and billions of dollars flowing to companies through fees that were under the law supposed to be at a quote unquote reasonable rate. So the Biden era effort was really just to restore the intention of the law and to keep those fees reasonable. And of course, industry fought that tooth and nail.
So the staff at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, about 90% were fired. The staff was slashed, and that was by Elon Musk and his Doge. And he seems to be directly profiting from these, dismantling these agencies.
Yeah, there's been a number of back and forth efforts to for the leadership to cut the staff and for, you know, those on the outside who are really fighting for on behalf of Congress, in my mind, to make sure that the agencies follow the law. And so the staff is still in place, but they're not able to work. And we're kind of waiting to see how things shake out in the court. And to your point, yeah, we saw Elon Musk kind of blow through the federal government and attack a lot of different agencies, but in many cases, really focus on places where he had personal financial interests. And the CFPB was one of those. He's not been shy about his desire to turn Twitter, or X as we call it now, into an everything app where people can make payments. And he had made moves in that direction. And the biggest thing standing in his way was the CFPB, who was going to make sure that his payments app followed the same rules as everyone else.
So there's a refocusing of priorities in internal policy memos that have been leaked, confirm that they're going to be shifting away from regulating and policing student loans, medical debt, consumer data, digital payments. They're not going to be doing that. So what is that? It's basically these critical areas that we all are dependent on. It becomes what goes back to the Wild West.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's sending a signal to the most predatory companies in this space that they have a green light to just kind of run roughshod over American consumers. And it's sending the message to consumers that they really don't have anyone in their corner. And I think, you know, one way to think about it is that the CFPB in the past has really tried to focus its efforts in a risk-based way, you know, look at what are the biggest risks to consumers and focus their efforts there. So when you see the Trump administration dialing back on these big priorities, they're dialing back on the areas where consumers are most at risk of predatory or fraudulent actions.
I mean, it seems like we need consumer education now more than ever. These instruments are getting more and more complicated. They're making it easier and easier to access. They're not giving us information about what we're clicking through. They make these user agreements so long and complicated, I mean, deliberately, so we really don't understand what's happening to us. It's difficult to understand what it is that we're signing up for.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we, in some cases, need more education, but I also think we need really basic rules of the road, right? So that when people sign up for a financial product, they know what they're getting out of it. There's no kind of tricks and traps buried underneath. So, you know, the same thing we were talking about with junk fees. If you're, if you're signing up for a bank account, you know when you sign up what the cost of that bank account is going to be. If you take on a loan, you know what the interest rate is going to be, and you're not going to be hit with 35 fees down the road that make it twice as expensive.
And as we were saying with the buy now, pay later, and how they make that so easy to use, they make it almost, you have to opt out of it at times when you buy things online, that without something like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that they can present themselves as one thing and actually be something else.
That's right. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau really was holding the line on behalf of consumers. It's the only federal agency, and in some cases, it's really the only agency overall that is looking at things from the perspective of how they impact consumers. And that's important for us individually. There have been millions and millions of dollars saved for consumers through CFPB's actions. But it's also important for the economy overall. You know, it was predatory actions against consumers that landed us in the last big financial crisis. The CFPB was born out of the lessons we learned in that crisis. So dialing back on the CFPB's efforts or killing the CFPB overall really puts us at risk of another financial crisis.
Right. So that's what I'm wondering about. So we're talking about this debt bomb and with consumers, and it's trillions and trillions of dollars, and it's growing every year. And if there is a sudden recession, as some are predicting, then if people don't have a way to pay back this consumer debt, then that just accelerates the worsening of the economy. All this imaginary money just evaporates.
That's exactly right. And the thing that makes me most worried about that is that that could happen without anyone ever raising the alarm about it. Many of the types of debt that we've talked about, like earned wage access, buy now, pay later, these don't show up in credit reports. And so they don't always show up in these kind of like larger looks at the health of the economy. We really need an agency that is digging in with these companies, understanding their impacts and raising the alarm so that we're like diagnosing that debt bomb before it explodes.
But okay, like we saw during the mortgage meltdown, that when you have this debt and the debt is leveraged and then people are borrowing against that, that debt, and it amplifies down the road, and there's nothing to stop that from happening again. So if people, like we had a caller, Lola, saying she does her grocery bills and it works for her, as long as she can keep working, everything is fine. As long as she has a job, everything is fine. But if suddenly there is a contraction in the economy, people no longer are able to make those payments. It's not just about them not being able to make those payments, but these tranches and all this borrowing against borrowing in order to prop up a financial system, things can collapse.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And of course, you know, if we hit that situation, the federal government has some levers in its pocket to be able to address that and to be able to make it more or less difficult for consumers to deal with. I think, you know, the way the Trump administration is currently approaching the student loan program makes me concerned that they're not going to pull those levers when the time comes.
And we've seen that when they do the bailouts, they'll bail out the big financial guys, Wall Street, but they don't bail out the people who have borrowed to pay for the groceries.
That's right. And, you know, that dynamic is exactly what we're seeing play out in Congress right now, where the benefits and the focus is on the wealthiest and not on the rest of Americans. So, I'm concerned that history is going to repeat itself there.
And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of good financial reporting in this area.
You know, I think that there are certainly reporters who focus on this, but the data in many cases are not there.
I mean, it's going in the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, but it's not on the front page of your local newspaper.
That's exactly right. And you know, I think it is worrisome to me that we're getting our information through surveys done by online sites or by credit reporting agencies and not by the federal government. I think it's just important to understand that the federal government has turned off a lot of the research that would help us, you know, identify these trends and then put them in the local
and
paper.
Someone saying, hey, this is a red flag. We need to figure out this before the debt bomb goes off.
Exactly. You know?
Well, Julie Margareta Morgan, thank you so much. President of the Century Foundation, helping us work through these complicated financial instruments, what's happening with our money and with our economy right now. I appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.